Hey, I'm going to be in Lexington. I know it's far
away.
Oh,
yeah, no, can't make it. See ya.
I was hitting up the other guys.
This is episode 277 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with the people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. Before we start today's podcast with the 50th Bourbon Community Roundtable, here's your weekly bourbon news update. Walmart and the Texas ABC are back at it, and Walmart is trying to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Walmart can sell beer and wine in Texas, but it is prohibited from owning a package store permit, and therefore prohibited from selling spirits. The retailer filed a lawsuit against the Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission in 2015, claiming it is irrationally banned for being a public company. In 2018, the U.S. District Court sided with Walmart, and the Texas ABC filed for appeal. The Fifth Circuit Court then ruled in favor of the Texas ABC, reversing the District Court's decision, and in June, Walmart decided to take its case to the U.S. Supreme Court. Walmart is citing the Tennessee Total Wine case as it conflicts with the ruling of the Fifth Circuit Court. With more references to the Tennessee Total Wine Court ruling, Ohio and Michigan are also facing backlash for prohibiting direct-to-consumer shipments from out-of-state wineries and distilleries. Both Ohio and Michigan are saying that the 21st Amendment protects them, as it should be left to the state. Both parties claim that it can't monitor or regulate liquor sales across the state, and they will lose out on taxes that are coming in as well. Beam Suntory has agreed to pay a $19.5 million fine to resolve a criminal probe for bribes to sell a line of its products in India, the U.S. Justice Department has said. Beam paid bribes to Indian officials to obtain business in India from the time it acquired the Indian business in 2006 all the way to 2012, mostly through third-party sales, promoters, and distributors, according to the settlement. Joseph A. Magnus is relocating its operations from Washington, D.C. to Holland, Michigan, effective October 31, 2020. Master blender Nancy Fraley will remain connected with the Magnus brand. Everyone is familiar with Jim Beam's legend, a combination of distilling with the nose and the blending expertise of Suntory's chief blender. And we reviewed that on a previous Whiskey Quickie. They are announcing a new denim collaboration with fashion designer Todd Snyder. Together, Legend and Snyder will release a limited edition bourbon selvage denim jacket, expertly tailored using super premium, hand-selected Japanese denim to deliver a collaboration rooted in American tradition with Japanese craftsmanship. It's now available for pre-order at toddsnyder.com for $250. And now moving on to bourbon release news. Master distiller Jim Rutledge, formerly of Four Roses and on episodes 11, 12, and 178, is not calling it quits yet. He's partnered with the Jordan shoe designer from Nike to release Blue Run, a 13-year-old Kentucky bourbon bottled at 113 proof and will be a limited supply run of 2,600 bottles only available in Kentucky and Georgia. It will have a retail price of $170. Maker's Mark has partnered with Keeneland for the second time in 2020 to create a limited edition bottle with the proceeds to support the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The bottle is all white, with the 2020 Breeders' Cup logo on the front, with purple wax, and has a green wax Keeneland medallion stamped on the front. The bottle will be sold in limited quantities at select retailers in Kentucky on Friday, October 30th. No price was given. It's the 50th recording of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. 4.5 years later, we're finally at this milestone of a podcast. I won't get sappy because there's plenty of that towards the end, but we kick off the show talking about the recent news of many secondary groups banning Van Winkle sales. And then we take a look back at our time together and play a few games of Who Said That. Enjoy today's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. It is Halloween. Woo, spooky. That means it's time for the daddy tax. That's right. When my children get candy, daddy goes through the bag and looks through there and sees what he wants. Of course, no one can really say what the taxation situation will be like this year due to COVID and nobody really trick-or-treating. I'm going to be very curious to see how that all goes. But I'll tell you what is not changing, and that is breaking out the bourbon to pair with Halloween candy. Oh my goodness, is there a better pairing in the world than Halloween candy and bourbon? Oh, I don't think so. I love the taste of a Twizzlers up against a Four Roses single barrel, or a Reese's in Old Forster 1920. Or perhaps my favorite of them all is to break out an Old Dusty with that kind of, that like touch of oak and bitterness and licorice, black licorice note, and pair that up against a piece of dark chocolate. Ooh, the bitter on bitter just really melts my mouth every single time. So, as you are out there looking through your child's candy, do not forget to take care of yourself. The mommy and daddy tax is a very serious issue in this country, and we need to make sure that our children pay the same price that we did. No, they should pay double what we did. Happy Halloween, everybody. Be safe out there, and that's going to do it for this week's Above the Char. Make sure you're following me on all the socials and YouTube. Just search for my name, Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers!
And they're off for another Gift270 2020 Unicorn Raffle. Your $20 ticket gives you not one, but two chances to win from our lineup of 20 Woodford Reserve treasures, including the grand prize, the rarest unicorn yet, the Woodford Reserve Kentucky Derby 150 Baccarat Edition. Only 150 bottles were made and is just like the one the Derby winning owner receives. Quit horsing around and get your $20 tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at WhiskeyAmbitions.com. Ed Bly and Rising Tide Spirits are back again with a new release of Old Stubborn Bourbon. And this release of Old Stubborn is a premium hand marriage of 10, 11, and 12-year cask strength, barely filtered pot still bourbon. It comes in at a staggering 123.8 proof, and the flavoring grain for this one, which the last one was wheated, but this time it's now rye. Rich, sweet, and bold with a long finish that's sure to be another eye-opener. You can order online at Sealbox or thebourbonconcierge.com, and you can even purchase in person at Revival Vintage Spirits and even now with very few select stores in Kentucky. You can get it now while you can, but be sure to do it because it's not going to last long. Welcome, everybody. It is the 50th episode of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. We did it. We're finally here. 4.5 years later, we finally, we're up to 50 of these. That's amazing. Very, very excited to actually have every single person that was a core member of this crew to actually be here tonight. And apologies in advance to my wife who'll have to be editing this because Lord knows there'll be a lot of talking over and trying to figure out who's speaking at one point. So we'll do our best to kind of just move this thing along as well. So Fred, Ryan, good to see you all here as well. I'm super excited for tonight's episode.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, man. This is an awesome one. I mean, we're amongst friends and I miss everybody here. It's so good to see you. What a great occasion. Of course, I was late to this incredible party, but Ryan, you're an OG, man. You're the people's champ, and this is the 50th roundtable. How does that make you feel?
I'm not sure. I was trying to think back like on all the 50 and like the first like 10. And I'm like, I don't even remember. It's like a blur. It was Kenny's great idea to put this all together. And we didn't know how well it'd be. And it ended up being one of our most popular shows ever, always. So yeah, kudos to Kenny for coming up with this idea and getting this talent around us because, you know, Kenny and I were idiots and we needed all these real bloggers, you know, to make this legitimate.
See, there's somebody clearing their throat down here and I know exactly what he's getting ready to say too.
I'm just saying maybe the idea didn't completely start with Kenny.
So the truth comes out.
So I will say, you know, the whole
Twitter message thread that we all had together was definitely Carrie's brainchild right there. And that's kind of how we all started talking and stuff like that. But, you know, I think the podcast, I don't know, I might take 60-40 on that one. I can't remember.
You can take 7. You can take 90. I just want to
He always told me it was his idea, Kenny, or Carrie.
I'm pretty sure when you interviewed us, you guys, you talked about like getting something going like that. It was like when the idea wasn't even really an idea yet. It was at the end of it just – I want to get guys on and just talk bourbon, not like on a regular basis. And it kind of left there. So I'm going to say there's a split there too. And then I think Carrie kind of tied everybody together. So kind of 50-50.
So now, Brian, as our trademark lawyer, are we by Kenny admitting that Carrie played a role in that? Are we in any way, are we in trouble down the road?
Royalties? Well, it all depends when that cash starts flowing in.
Yeah, I don't see anybody with a sponsor logo at the bottom of this right now, so I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. We're good on that front.
So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to take a look back at 4 years and 50 episodes. And before we go too far and do our traditional introductions, you know, I want to also say shout out to other past BCR guests that have been on the show. We used to have Max Christie from Superfly Bourbon Club, Ryan Lentz from Bourbon Buddy, Wade Woodard of Tater Talk, Marion Eves of... Of course, Marion Eves, David Jennings of Rare Bird, and of course, Carla Carlton. So thank you to everybody that has been a past stand-in on this roundtable to give their opinions on hot topics and culture and everything like that. The first BCR episode actually went live September 16th of 2016, and it was episode 65 of the podcast. So it actually took quite a long time before we even started kicking off these roundtables. And you know, over the years, we've picked some barrels together. Some of us have started new businesses. We've shared the stage together at a music festival. We've had two people here that have tried to do apps and abandoned them. So there's a lot of things that we've all tried to do. I mean, it's been fun to see the successes and, you know, even the not so successes, but it's learning from
all
those
failures. Well. I understand that the app was a failure. Okay.
Well,
I can say that.
Let's go ahead and let the person who introduced themselves, who has never missed a roundtable, Cal Ripken of it. Blake, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. You know, been here for all 50 of them. And as Chris Wiseman put it in the comments, Ryan was not at the first one, which is, it was kind of hard to believe. I actually went back and listened to some of the early roundtables tonight, and I could have sworn he was there. But, you know, number two, we talked about him not being there. But no, it's honestly one of the most fun things I do and able to be a part of in the bourbon world. Always enjoy coming on here. That's why I try not to miss them. You know, rain or shine, try to be here. Cal Ripken's got to keep the streak alive. But I guess I should say also, this is Blake from Bourboner and Sealbox. But if you're watching the 50th episode, you probably know that by now. So once again, guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And that one time you were at Disney and you had to run outside and be on the cell phones.
I put four kids to bed after Disney and still jumped on from the parking lot. And I was getting like angry text messages from Kenny, like, your sound's terrible. Why are you on here? Go back.
Please drop off.
I get it. But I just want to say I did make it for that episode. So
I think I was just tired for the first one. So I just skipped it. You know, it was like,
and I remember Blake. Blake, early on, before I was a part of the show, you reached out to me and you were like, hey, you should come on to this round table and talk about bourbon culture and everything. And I was like, I was kind of intrigued by it. It didn't really match with my schedule at the time. But I remember thinking to myself, I was like, this is the Around the Horn for bourbon, you know, like, because I watched Around the Horn on ESPN. And it was a lot like that. So, I mean, I just think this was ingenious for, you know, 2016, the media world of bourbon was kind of in the middle stages, and it's exciting to see how far it's come.
For sure. Yeah. So I'll take credit for bringing Fred on the show. So y'all are welcome.
Everybody's taking credit for something.
Oh, gosh. All right. We'll let the guys from Breaking Bourbon go next.
Yeah, sure. So this is Jordan, breakingbourbon.com. You know, when you're in the liquor store figuring out what to buy, check us out. We're always there for you. Along with me is, I'll let Nick introduce himself.
Yeah. So, hey guys, this is Nick, one of the other guys from Breaking Bourbon. Glad to be here. You know, our third guy, there's three of us, Eric, I think he's been on one round table so far. I'm trying to remember when that was, but I'm pretty sure he was on it. It was when Kerry was on. He's a huge part of Breaking Bourbon too. I know he's not on these round tables like Jordan and I are. So I want to give a shout out to him because he spends an insane amount of time doing site work behind the scenes, of course, reviewing and all that good stuff. But yeah, I'm glad to be here. Happy to see everybody. There's a lot of chatter over in the chat. So that's awesome. I mean, I want to see some good questions and, you know, just a lot of chatter. So glad to be here, guys.
Great. All right, Brian, go for it, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys, for having me again. This is incredible. I think I've made most of them. Obviously, nowhere near Cal Ripken over there, but it's been fun. This has been a great run. I'm in it for another 150 more. I'll be ready for the bicentennial. Anyhow, Brian with Sippin' Corn. You can find me at bourbonjustice.com, sippincorn.com, and all the socials at Sippin' Corn. And I've loved how we've been able to touch in important kind of breaking news, kind of almost hard-hitting news on some of the things, and then still balance it with the fun side of culture and the fun things happening in the bourbon world and not taking ourselves too seriously. So great brainchild from all of you who have created this, and I'm just glad to be along.
We're happy you're here for us, or with us too, buddy.
Careful, right, Brian. That breaking news in the bourbon world, we've got that trademark. So
that's one of the things Lauren can edit out.
Yeah. We'll talk to our attorney about it.
And down here to the bottom right, the man who's actually knows how to use the mute button, which has been impressive. I mean, it must be
like I'm off my game. I'm nervous, so I'm breathing heavy. So I got to mute myself. You get out of sync.
It's perfect. We love it. We love people that know how to make sure there's no background noise.
Cool. Well, hey guys, this is Kerry. I have a blog called suburbia.com, SUBOURBIA. But honestly, I don't know if I paid to renew it. So it may still be up. It may not. I'm on Instagram, but I'll be honest, I've gotten completely tired of hashtags. Why do you got to put like 100 hashtags on every post? It's driving me crazy. So I know my buddy told me the other day that Trump and I are the only two people he knows that are on Twitter, but that's still my home is Twitter. So you can mainly find me there. I still think it's the best place for quick photos, discussion, et cetera. But I'm going to have Kenny teach me TikTok pretty soon so that maybe I can move over there.
You know, everybody made fun of it. And then look what happened this past week. Mm-hmm. And he just blew up. It blew up. I mean, honestly, it's been crazy to have a video go viral. It's been almost like 30 plus million views on that one video now that's been reposted through a bunch of accounts. I think we gained like 15,000 Instagram followers in the past 3 days. Like it's been a pretty good little run there.
I really can't escape it. Like every time I go to Instagram, it's some account that I follow is reposting it. It's like, well, what do you think about $800 ice? And I just comment every time, these guys are jerks. I don't care about their ice.
No, it's like I said, it's been fun. It's been fun. And you know, it wouldn't have been possible without one of our partnerships with Meltdown. So if it was just me sitting there talking, it wouldn't have done anything. So really cool to be able to see that happen. So we've got
got to be happy about that, right?
I'd say so. I think they've should be very happy with kind of how crazy it's gone. They struck internet gold for the day. So
and Heaven Hill gets the free 30 million views. Way to go, Kenny.
I know. I'm kicking myself. I was like, why didn't I just use Pursuit Series? I should have just used Pursuit Series. It would have been fine.
Had you known.
So for tonight's roundtable, we've got one actual bourbon business topic to kind of go over before we start going over some, you know, some reminiscing, some games of like who said what and kind of do we still feel the same about some of the things we used to say as well. And that is coming from something that kind of came to light last night, and that there are no more sales of Pappy Van Winkle that are taking place in some of the Facebook groups, marketplaces, whatever it is. And this is because they complained about the growing cases of fraud that they've seen and Van Winkle's being sold and really taking up a lot of their time to actually do tracing and verification. And it was just a blanket sweep that said, we're not going to do this anymore. And we've seen a lot of groups actually follow suit as well. I think this is a very interesting take to kind of have, especially as we come into release season, which will probably be in the next 2 to 3 weeks as we'll probably start seeing these drop. And I don't think it's going to change people's perception of going out and buying them or doing anything. However, it'll be a little bit different to actually not see any boards flooded with stuff for a while. I'll leave it to the room and see what other people think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting thing, and I was talking with somebody about it that was involved, and basically they're saying, like, look, we know somebody had caps from the distillery, and some fakes have popped up with these caps traced back to the same person, and just got tired of trying to, you know, make sure these bottles are authentic. And it's really interesting because, you know, it seems like it'd be easy for Buffalo Trace to come out and say, hey, we're going to do, you know, some kind of RFD chip or something where it prevents fraud on these caps. But if they do that, then they're stuck admitting that people are reselling them, and, you know, they're very against the secondary. So they're kind of a tough place. Where I think it's interesting is now with, like, the Kentucky vintage spirit laws, all these bars and everyone are buying up bottles to, you know, then pour at their restaurant, bar, wherever it is. So I think something needs to be done kind of from the distillery side to protect a lot of these bottles from, you know, being counterfeited. But as far as the sales go, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there'll still be places to buy it. I'm sure people will still be flipping them on Craigslist and everywhere else. But I think it's a step in an okay direction.
I think this move comes at a very interesting time. You know, Wright Thompson, a friend of mine, like a really amazing sports writer, is coming out with the book Pappy Land. And there's just like...
Glad you said that, Fred.
Nice segue.
I did have it. I was taking a picture earlier. Good book.
Well played. I mean, he's actually, like, he's doing a thing where, like, you pre-order a book and you get into a raffle through Square Books. You know, pretty cool deal. I wish I had that for selling my books. I mean, Brian, you know what it's like to sell books. That'd have been really nice. But it's I just think that this is interesting in the narrative of Pappy. I've talked with a lot of people, and I just feel like there's a lot of Pappy fatigue, period. And I think people are just kind of like, you know, moving on. And this might be it. This might be the moment where, you know, the core, like, bourbon world is just like, fucking done. I mean, I'm done. I mean, I've seen it in, like, the real auctions that, like, Whiskey Auctioneer and Christie's and Skinner's. I mean, Pappy prices are not going up like Michter's prices are. Like, you're starting to see some bottles that are trending at a higher rate in some of these auction sites. And so I just think that this is part of the constant fatigue that we're seeing with Pappy. And it's just, I mean, good for those who are choosing to make this decision, because I know it probably wasn't easy, but at the same time, it's probably the right decision for the groups.
I've had Pappy fatigue since episode one of BCR. So so I'm kind of glad that this is happening, because, you know, I'm like, who cares? You know, I haven't hunted for Pappy in, you know, 4.5 years or more. And, you know, I think it's crazy. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously there's a market for it, so it should probably continue, but I don't see how Buffalo Trace can, like you said, Kenny or Blake, you can't admit to, like, we're going to stop fraudulent selling on the secondary market. So it's like, what are they supposed to do? You know, I don't know. So it's like one of the instances, like, where they just stuck their foot in the ground and said, we're not going to do anything, and it's going to work itself out, kind of. So kudos to them on that.
I think it's a good move for people in the bourbon groups in terms of not having to deal with it and all the admins and stuff. But we may be fatigued to Pappy, but culturally, it's ingrained now. Like, it hit that moment status where it is ingrained. Mm-hmm. It's like, right, Cohibas and Cuban cigars or something. People are just after them. They want to say they're, you know, they have Cohibas. Are they real? Are they fake? They don't care, as long as they believe it is what it is and they're enjoying it. That's all that counts, right? So the demand is there, and people don't even drink bourbon. They at least know what Pappy is, right? So I think for the non-core bourbon drinkers, it's not going to make a difference. It's still going to move really quickly outside of core Facebook groups. I think for us, right, and everyone watching this and listening to this and those who are hardcore bourbon drinkers, it's just like a sigh of relief to not have to see nonstop Pappy posts around this time, right? Like, let some other bourbons actually get the focus they deserve. And hopefully people will start expanding. And if they want to spend a ton of money on bourbon, that's great. But there's other great things out there to try instead. Right.
Well, so I'm just saying that if you want to sell your Pappy to me, I'm happy. I'll send you my contact info. I actually just poured Pappy 15. It's still really good. So I'm happy to buy it from you. I do think, you know, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference because Pappy's become just like a commodity for, you know, the bourbon you can't get. It's not the average everyday person who's racking up the Pappy. It's the, you know, the corporate sales party that wants to have Pappy and the, you know, the expensive, you know, I just keep thinking corporate functions where they buy the Pappy, and that's not going to change. I mean, those people are still going to be buying. I know in Atlanta, the people that, you know, purchase Pappy and they ask you, and there's nothing on Facebook. It's all offline. They're always looking. They're always buying. Yeah. I don't think that changes. I think maybe the price will change a little bit, but you know, it's funny. We're getting to a point where we always used to complain about the secondary market, and now we're actually praising the heads of secondary markets for making a decision regarding Pappy.
Interesting point. I will say that, you know, when you look at, I help a lot of charities, you know, with getting bourbon to help raise money for their causes. I got one that's coming up that's helping kids who have been abused, and, you know, they have a Pappy raffle that's coming up. And I just helped the Ronald McDonald House. They, $100 a piece, they had 1,500, you know, tickets. Went like that. I mean, they made $150,000 off of that. I think while we get so frustrated and angry about this, the one thing that I can say that the Van Winkles have always done and Pappy has always done is it has always raised a lot of money for charities out there. And like, if you are in the mood for spending secondary pricing, I'd recommend like trying to find a charity and, you know, spending it, that money there, finding an auction that is connected to, because you can always find an auction. You can always find a school. I mean, you can get Pappy. I swear there's more that goes to charities now, you know, directly from retailers than is going into a lot of markets, like, say, Boise, Idaho. You know, it's, but if you can get it just through charities.
Which, not all of those are from the retailers. A lot of folks I know have donated Pappy to those things. And so to Blake's earlier point, I think it makes sense for Buffalo Trace, for Sazerac to use the technology that's there. And there's some simple technology and there's some more complicated technology. It'd be really easy to implement because if I'm buying it at an auction, which I'm not going to do that either, I want to know it's authentic. And the vintage spirit bars want to know it's authentic. And if you're going there and you've got a business dinner and you're going to lay down the money for a Pappy, and I wouldn't do that either, you want to know it's authentic.
I want to make one quick point about, and I want to make sure people understand, I love Sazerac. I love all their products. I love Buffalo Trace. It's just, if you've ever seen the foil of a Pappy, half the time there is wrinkles or crudges or so. Their quality control in general, I don't think really cares that much. So I don't see them doing another step to put, you know, they're like, look, this is good bourbon. We know it's good. We're releasing it. But as far as putting trackers and RFIDs and all that kind of crap, they're like, we don't need to because we don't care about that.
You know, they put the wrong foil on the 15 years. What was that? 3 years ago now that they did that? True. And just didn't like say, hey, let's rip it off and start again. They just said, send it out. So, I mean, and I look at it from this perspective too. Whenever they were releasing these things and came up with the bottle and package design, what was Pappy 15 released? I mean, what, 15 years? No, it would have been a little, call it 20 years ago. And I don't think they ever thought in 1,000 years that they'd need things like, you know, anti-fraud tampering bottle caps or something, whatever it is. So, you know, it's hard to say that now just because it's so popular. And I know we're all kind of, you know, we're getting the bourbon hipster comments, but I don't think any of us are saying it's not good. It's just like, at this point, is it worth chasing after? And if people are going to chase after it, because obviously it's the most sought after bourbon, you would want them to be assured that it is, you know, it is the real deal. I'd hate for a bottle to end up in a charity auction that raises, like Fred said, $100,000 and come back to find out it was an empty and they've got the bottle from eBay and it was a fake. So I think that's all we're really talking about here is, you know, Macallan did this a couple years ago where they added bottle caps or something that stopped it. But I don't know. It's a hard problem to solve. And at the end of the day, I think the cost involved, you know, those caps probably cost them 2 cents a piece. So to get something that would stop it it's what I'm assuming, a quarter a piece. Well, that's a big deal. Well,
and labor too.
Yeah, thousands of bottles. So
I'm not sure that we really have a good handle on how many fakes are really out there and how many fakes are really going through the you know, relatively accessible secondary groups online versus what's happening, you know, person to person. And even in other countries where, you know, you hear about these, you know, these gigantic schemes going on in places like China, where they just basically create a whole product, copy it, and sell it as if, you know, it was the original, and they actually have a massive business behind it, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, how much is actually, you know, going through and getting the people in the United States, and how much is actually going through those online secondary groups? I mean, if that is a big volume and this does cut it back, I got to believe that the liquor store owners, at least who, you know, maybe have given it to a friend or sold it online before, you know, through a, you know, non-retailer means. Now, if they have to go person to person and everybody that comes in say, hey, I have something in the back, that's going to be a much smaller market that's going to be willing to pay those exorbitant prices, you know, so that may, you know, fizzle off the exorbitant prices a little bit to that extent. But I think some good points here too, that, you know, a lot of it is the big company stuff. It's the brand everybody knows, it's the brand everybody wants to be. And we're seeing a lot more brands, you know, do things like host tastings and actually talk about, you know, bourbon and that kind of thing. And so, you know, maybe there's enough market there that it just follows that. And I think somebody made the comment, it's mainstream. And I agree with that. You know, it's just a name that everybody knows. You know, when I'm talking with people who don't know anything about bourbon, they bring up Pappy, kind of like the only one from a name brand they can think of. You know, so that right there is an impressive and massive market share that's going to have some legs on it, that I'll be curious to see how that unfolds in the next couple of years.
And there's one thing I want to kind of interject before we kind of move on to the next part is dovetailing a little off what Blake said. You know, he had mentioned a $100,000 bottle going to auction. That's an expensive Pappy right there, buddy. I don't know what kind of bottle you found.
You know,
but
you know how some of these
raffle.
Like a raffle. You know, if they sell $100 tickets, they sell thousands.
Giving you help, buddy.
Yeah, come on.
Listen, we don't mess with the Cal Ripken. Come on.
but the other thing is, there was another comment that came in the chat talking about prices. Like, they've maintained very competitive pricing for a very long time for some of the bourbons that are well known to fetch 5x, 6x its actual market value. Yet they don't do anything about it. They don't change what they're trying to get off of it. So if we expect them to go and try to tackle fraud, maybe we should give them the leeway to say, okay, start adding a little bit more of this into the cost of what it actually is going to take to either build in, whether it's traditional physical manufacturing pieces to it, whether it's a digital footprint and you check it in an online database. I don't know, whatever it is, but all that comes at a cost. And you can't just sit there and say, yeah, this $80 bottle, I should be able to have it and not have it be for $500 and it shouldn't be on the secondary, blah, 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 blah. I think it's just a lot of really far-fetched thinking for a lot of folks to really go into.
I think before we close that, the one other thing about Pappy that it offers that the others don't is just the experience factor at this point. As an example, I brought a 10-year old Rip to kids' sporting event. I won't get into details, but basically I let two people try it and they were blown away. They were like, I've never had Pappy, you know, and I've never had the 10-year, blah, blah, blah. Like, it offers an experience that I wish other bourbons would move into. I wish Michter's 20 would move into that. Some of the Heaven Hill ultra age products would move into the mainstream kind of thing.
I would say Michter's is there. I think Michter's is there. So many people watch Billions that if they see that bottle, they want that over Pappy.
Yeah,
true.
Pappy has that. Honestly, though, people know Pappy, but they also just know the red bag, right? That's literally what, like, that. I mean, people know Michter's, but Pappy, they just see the red bag and they know what it means, right? That's it. It's so synonymous now with what that bourbon is. And that was probably one of the smartest moves, unbeknownst to them doing it, that they could have done.
Yeah, there's no shortage of rich people that want nice, fancy things for, you know, that, like, Pappy, a bottle of Pappy is nothing, you know.
For
I mean, I can't tell you, people approach me like, I don't care what it costs, just get it to me. And I'm like, well, I can't even get it. So
I still compare it to wine. I mean, people are paying $10,000 for a bottle of Bordeaux all the time, like it's nothing. And that's for one sitting. At least a bottle of Pappy 23, you know, maybe you're paying $2,000 and it'll last you, you know, years, or at least a lot of people in one fun night. So I still think there's room for it to continue to go up.
Perfect.
Yeah, ready to put this one to bed? Like scotch.
Let's put it to bed.
Yeah, everybody wants to go. Let's talk about some fun stuff. Let's do some reminiscing.
Ooh.
So,
oh boy.
This is let's go to a little segment we'll call Do We Still Feel the Same? So, in Bourbon Community Roundtable number 7, one of the questions I posed was, what bottles would you say are a must for a noob? So, if you're going to start with 5 bottles, what would be on your list?
If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon. So in Bourbon Community Roundtable number 7, one of the questions I posed was, what bottles would you say are a must for a noob? So if you're going to start with 5 bottles, what would be on your list?
Oh man, that was roundtable number 7?
Roundtable number 7.
Are you going to tell us?
I'm guessing like 75% of the bottles we said are no longer available.
I have some of the answers to somebody's response to here, but let's kind of go around a little bit and let's maybe not everybody go, but let's kind of just throw out some bottles today for anybody that's actually getting into this. What are the 5 bottles that you should start out with?
Okay, I'll go first. Eagle Rare, Buffalo Trace, Heaven Hill 7-year bottled in bond, Elijah Craig small batch, and a Four Roses small batch or single barrel.
Very good. I think it's all good. You know, I think Buffalo Trace is still kind of a hit and miss, especially Eagle Rare. I mean, around here in Kentucky, we can't find Eagle Rare on the shelf. It's impossible.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, and I'll jump in that 7-year isn't everywhere, so we can't get that. I bet you I would have said in 2016, I would have said Elijah Craig 12-year, and I agree with Carrie that the Elijah Craig small batch would be on the list now. I'd put the Four Roses small batch select on it. And then it gets tough after that. I mean, then you get people who want to try something new, and I would definitely recommend a Wilderness Trail for them, particularly the rye. I mean, they can't miss on that. And then I don't know. I'll do those top 3 and end it there.
I think you got to throw in Wild Turkey Rare Breed in there. And I you know, agree
you think,
on the.
You think Rare Breed for a beginner, or do you think say like you should go 101? Are we
completely new to bourbon in general? Because if so, you got to go all low proof. So then, you know, maybe. Mm. Are they still making the 86 proof? I guess they are, right? Yeah.
101.
I you know, I gotta say, like, never underestimate a person's palate. Just because you think they're new doesn't mean they're going to like that watered down bull mess of Basil Hayden, you know? So a lot, I really,
well, there went our Basil Hayden sponsorship. Yeah.
Hey, you can even get it with a 10-year age statement too.
Yeah. Well, you know, they call Kenny the dream killer. I'm the sponsor killer. So while Ryan's the people's champion, but I have rare breed on my list. I also have, because I think that the journey of being new is tasting batches and releases and kind of seeing how a brand can differ from batch to batch. And I think Barrel Bourbon does a brilliant job of showing you how different bourbon can be. Now, granted, that's because they're getting whiskey from all over the damn place. And then Four Roses Single Barrel, Elijah Craig, small batch, great, everyday one to get. And then one that I'm surprised it's not on anyone's list is Maker's Mark. I mean, yep. Maker's, for what it is fine.
Yep. Yeah. I'd say Maker's 46, any of those would be great. As well as I'm a big fan of Michter's Bourbon. It still seems to be a lot of places, either that or throwing like an Old Forester 1920, 1910, whatever they can find.
A very long beginner list, right?
So they only have 50 bottles to buy and $2,000 to drop. But
but I think the key is variation too, right? It's more so like, you know, if I'm recommending stuff to folks, right? Maker's is on my list, right? Get people after Wheated Bourbon, Wild Turkey 101, bottle of Buffalo Trace, Elijah Craig Small Batch, right? And then something from Old Forester. And that's whether, you know, you need to pull somebody in with a Woodford or you just need to pull somebody in with a lower proof Old Forester, just so they get that variation in tasting different distilleries and figuring out where they gravitate to, right? And if we can expand it, it'd probably be like a Four Roses too, just so you can be like, all right, this is a type of mashable I prefer. And then you start guiding them down that journey. But I think that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah, I agree with you on Old Forester. I didn't even think about that. That's why we have you, Jordan. Like, you steer us.
Anytime.
You steer us the right way. Old Forester, yeah, 1920.
Or the ride. For, I mean, that ride is like $20.
Yeah. Yep. Great, yeah, ride for
local. When we're talking about the new person, though, that I do love the 1920. I mean, that's my favorite of the, yeah, Whiskey Row series. But for a new person, I've given that to some people relatively new. And it punches you in the face. The proof does, anyhow.
So that's, yeah, why you go with 1910. 1910 is the double.
Yeah. Yeah. Or 1897, yeah, or 18.
And when you're starting off, yeah, you don't like a lot of proof. So you offer, yeah, maybe an $800 ice cube to water it down a little bit.
You got to have real sponsorship to get that thing, though.
But I mean, this is a good thing to see, is that now there's so much more on the market at even a lower price point than we talked about a few years. So I'll kind of give some answers that we had a few years ago here. So Jordan's answers back in the day, which surprising though we actually said it, was Old Granddad 114, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Still available on the shelf, still solid, even for somebody that says they love Basil Hayden. Be like, here you go, try this. Mm-hmm. Henry McKenna 10, it's dead. So
thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thanks, Fred.
Eagle Rare, which is already mentioned, of course, is Maker's. And then Evan Williams Single Barrel.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
I kind of forget about that one, to be honest. When was the last Evan Williams?
You don't see it anymore.
I was cleaning out my basement the other night, and I had a little bottle, or a bottle, and had like a little pour of Evan Williams Single Barrel from like '96 or something. I was like, ooh, it was awesome.
So you know, since we talked about that though, it keeps going down in age, right? Which is interesting. So not as easily to recommend.
Don't bring up depressing shit, Jordan.
Sorry. <Yeah. laughs>
Kenny, do you have mine? Evan Williams Single Barrel, though, if you want to start collecting, I mean, just start buying each year. I mean, like Ryan just said, that 96, that was, I think, that blind tasting we all did. I remember that one was, I think that one was the winner in the blind tasting. And no one guessed that's what it was going to be, if I remember right. But, you know, yeah, that's when you start collecting now. You get one or two bottles from each year. You look back, like, 30 years from now, and you've got all these vintage bottles. You can taste the difference as it goes. They're really low cost, assuming they're in your area. I mean, I've already bought, based on where my kids' ages are so far, one has passed the date put in oak. So I bought a few bottles of that very as close as I could find to his birthday. And I told him, I said, that this will be your first bottle of bourbon. You know, we'll have it when you can drink it. And, you know, so then I've just bought those each year, just keep them sealed because I have one open right now. That's enough. And I'm going to look back on it, and that stuff's going to become like the vintage dusty stuff, maybe, you know, at least 20 or 30 years from now, it's probably going to taste different than what they're putting out at that time. So that's a cool one. You can actually date really easily.
Yep. And then probably to no surprise was that Blake and Brian both said you need to have Blanton's in that.
Really? Haters. My how things can change. We've grown.
You ruined everything.
But granted, you know, Blanton's is still good bourbon. And at the time, it was sitting on shelves and it looked cool. And I don't think either of us would have predicted Blanton's would be what it is today, you know, 4 years later. So I stand by my answers.
Me too. Not backing down.
Blanton's is like the new Pappy. That like, oh, you gotta get a Blanton's. You gotta get in line at 7 a.m. and line up to get Blanton's.
People just go crazy for Blanton's. I don't
know. And all the groups are like, it's on the shelves at the distillery today. You know, they say that at 9 a.m. and I guess people are driving special trip. It's
like, I mean, me and Kenny fell prey to it. We were there and they were like, we got these little Blanton's bottles, and we're like, shit. All right.
Mini Blanton's are cool.
We're the worst.
I would buy mini Blanton's if I found
them. They were something. The mini ones, the 375s. Yeah. You're like, okay.
Meanwhile, Buffalo Trace was taking a TikTok making fun of y'all buying mini Blanton's bottles.
They were like, it's got a look at these worst guys. Thing on it. Or I don't know.
Kenny, what were mine?
Would you say?
What were mine?
Oh, I don't have everybody's. I just had a little bit of note over here.
You had everybody else.
Listen, we've got a lot more fun stuff to go through. Cool. Don't you worry.
I probably wasn't on that episode, so I didn't have a list.
All right, so we're going to get into another question here. So back on episode 143, which was Roundtable 19, it was one of the first times we actually talked about shipping, and we all know that shipping has drastically changed over the years, and we got one person here that's actually taken good advantage over it, so it's been awesome to see that business bloom. But one of the things that we also talked on there was really the rise of MGP, and one of the questions I had posed is, are we getting tired of seeing $100 MGP bourbons? And that was when $100 was really like, that was the ceiling, and people were getting ready to start going for it. Now we are looking at $100 as kind of being the norm. You know, Ryan and I, we had a conversation, I think it was last week, one of our brokers reached out and said, hey, we've got some 7 to 8 year MGP rye. You want to buy it? It's X amount of dollars a barrel. We did the math. We're like, well, we have to sell it for at least $90 to make it worth our time.
And so, I'll buy it.
And so this was also at the time, you know, we'd look it back at episode or Roundtable 19, $50 was kind of pushing it and should have been like really where it was at. And that was the Templeton and that was everybody else at the time. So I guess the question to you all is, are you getting tired of seeing $150 MGPs?
I mean $150 MGP or like $400 MGP.
Yeah.
Somebody said smoke wagon. I don't know. I mean, it's funny how like we went through this thing where nobody knew what MGP was. Then it was kind of like, you know, a little bit of, it was frowned upon to be MGP. And now, shoot, if you have aged MGP barrels, you're basically sitting on a gold mine. So are we personally tired of it, or do we think the market will continue to be tired of it? I don't think it's going away anytime soon. You know, there's just too much fanfare and hype around it. So
I think that statement helps. I mean, there's not how many age stated barrel proof whiskeys out there. So that's like, anytime you have that, you're gonna, I mean, you should pay $100-$120, you know, because it's just a rare item these days. And so I'm happy to pay that if it's, you know, barrel proof, got a 8 to 12 year age statement, it's good whiskey, just because it's not very common anymore.
Well, exactly. I think at this point, you know, looking back, we were burned out on MGP. I'd be happy to pay that for a high aged MGP just so I didn't have to buy another bottle of Dickel. Right, kind of flip the script. There's so much Dickel on the market now because they took over from MGP that now, you know, it's like, all right, MGP, where are you? It's funny how things work out that way in a really
short order. Is interesting because I mean, I feel like it was around everywhere for a while with all kinds of ages, and then all of a sudden, like, there's nothing over 10 years from MGP right now. So,
with all that said about MGP, I mean, I think they got a little bit of competition right now. I got a beat on some like Jim Beam. A 15-year-old that's in totes, that's coming back from overseas. There's some, you know, there's endless rumors about Turkey having, you know, mass quantities out in totes. There's Barton's got a ton out there. I know Brown-Forman sold some stuff at wholesale a while back. I mean, there's going to be a lot of source Kentucky straight bourbon coming on the market. And Kenny, Ryan, all right, you two are sourced. You guys are a sourced whiskey company. You're bottlers. I mean, you got MGP, you got Kentucky straight bourbon. Which are you choosing?
Oh, okay, Kentucky straight bourbon. Yep. Every day. Absolutely. Every day.
All day.
So there you go. Last Friday, I met a friend and we tried one of the old 8-year MGP Smooth Ambler, you know, the original Old Scout.
Oh, those were so good.
There was a flavor, there was a taste that like brings me back to the beginning of bourbon and when I started getting into bourbon in 2014, 2015 that I haven't had with the newer MGP. And I know we all say, oh, the new stuff's not like the old stuff, but there is definitely something about that old run of MGP, the 8 to 10 year stuff that was just different from the stuff that was today. And I don't know if this, because at that point they realized how popular it was and they started making more, but you try that stuff and you know that there's definitely a difference between the stuff from even 6 years ago to today.
I mean, they were pulling out honey barrels and those things were so good. And I remember, like, you know, when I had the opportunity to do some barrel picks, people were asking me, like, I wanted to do Boone County for a barrel pick because I knew that they had, after Smooth Ambler, they had the most coveted batch of barrels from MGP. And, you know, we got a couple 12 years that were just amazing. And it's, MGP's got great whiskey. I mean, they really do. And they, yep, they do. I mean, they may be getting sued by their shareholders, but they've got great whiskey.
I think you're right on about that too, Fred. I think there's a lot of variation in their whiskey as well. And I think maybe people have gotten, and by people, I mean, you know, the producers who were sourcing there, you know, just a little overzealous or just don't, you know, look or think about it as deeply as they did before when they had more selection, a little more of the power was tilted toward their side. Now it's tilted towards, you know, whoever's selling barrels, barrel brokers and so forth. You know, where now there's still great barrels there, but there's a ton of variation in it. And I think if you're not careful, you're getting a lot of stuff as a producer that's just so-so or even not good. And I think we've seen the age come down with a lot of brands, and brands are putting out 2-year, 3-year, which is fine. But I think you've got to hunt harder for those good barrels because of it. And who knows if that'll have a longer term impact on people's perception of MGP.
Yeah. And it's hard to say too, because they kind of have a conflict of interest with having their own brands, you know, and then selling to other companies too. So it's kind of like, all right, you know, you started these two brands and now, like, I mean, obviously the older stuff sold off, but there is a stark difference between the older MGP, like Kerry said, and the newer stuff. The quality is just not there as we're used to, but I don't know. It's kind of a conflict of interest, I think.
You know, we got an episode coming up. We got an episode coming up about that, Ryan.
Or, yeah, I wasn't there either.
You might have been there, but you just weren't paying attention. That's not all, like, it was down to.
I think you were there. Was he not?
Was
there?
I can't remember.
I don't know what episode you're talking about. We got a lot of them in the queue to still go.
Wait, we had the MGP brand manager.
No, he wasn't there. That was me and you, Big Dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. So let's go ahead and we'll move on to another game called Who Said What? And this is kind of looking back at some quotes from a lot of past BCRs. And I'll say it and you all guess and try to figure out exactly who said it. All right?
Oh, boy.
This is fun. I can't wait.
All right. So the first one here. Didn't somebody predict that OFC charitable bottle was a Trojan horse for them and then to release it later for $2,500? Oh, wait. I think that was me. End quote.
That's a Blake statement right there.
Blake.
It was Blake. That was Blake. I feel like I didn't say that because I almost said, hold on, I predicted that.
Yes, you did.
Glad I let Kenny finish there. But
yeah, it's totally Blake.
All right, that was an easy one. That was back on episode 143, Roundtable 19. All right. Wow. Here's this one. I think there's too many people in this bourbon hobby and they need to get the hell out.
Ooh, oh, that's Kerry.
Yeah, that's Kerry.
It's gotta be.
You guys are good. That was Kerry. That's Bourbon Community Roundtable number 6.
I mean, I still think that way.
You're the only one who would say nothing.
Love it.
I don't think anyone else would have said that.
All right. This is, I guess it kind of goes back to what our last subject was here. So bourbon prices are going up, but if you can be an okay bourbon in an okay price range, you'll be rewarded.
That's a Brian statement.
Yeah, Brian, that's way too logical.
I'm going with Jordan.
Yeah. I'm going with Jordan. Yeah, that sounds more like Jordan. I don't know that I said that as well.
I think that was you, Jordan.
That was Jordan. That was Jordan.
Yeah. You're good.
That was round table number 27.
This is easy, dude. Come on, make it harder. Like, feed into our personalities.
It just shows how good of internet friends we are. That's all.
That's true. I didn't know Kerry was like an FBI profiler. I mean, he's like, hold on, what'd they say? Okay, yep, that's definitely this.
Hey, wait. Your next one is curse. Oh, that's Fred.
Wait, didn't everybody listen to all of them over the weekend? Wasn't that the homework?
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah. I can't listen to my own voice.
49 hours.
Yeah. Vodka sucks. That's what somebody said.
Yeah, that's an easy one. All right. If you had asked me what would have happened in 2018 last year, I would have whiffed hard.
Ooh.
That's pretty vague.
That was Ryan's one quote.
I think that's Ryan.
The round table.
That is Ryan. That's back on 27.
Yeah.
Remember Eric's one time on the round table, he was in a closet. Like he didn't have anything else to go. It's in like a small 4x4 cell.
Where are you, man? It was really me and Nick just running back and forth playing Eric.
And you could see Nick and Jordan in the background.
All right. This one's kind of topical here. My next Halloween costume, I'm gonna be Pappy Van Winkle drinking bourbon all day. Fred.
Nick.
I'm going Nick.
I'm going Nick.
You guys are right. It is Nick.
Really?
Man, I'm like over on this.
Do you remember that, Nick?
I don't remember that.
It was back on Bourbon County Roundtable number 20. Number 20 there.
I want one of yours, though, Kenny. Like, you're going to throw us under the bus. Give one of yours.
All right, I might throw one in there.
Okay, everybody gets one. Y'all turn your mics down and mute yourself. I'm tired of you. Who said it?
Move your mic closer. Move it closer.
It's awesome.
All right. Something that pisses me off. Stop it with the crotch shot, guys. I don't need to see any crotch shots in 2017.
Brian.
Let it die.
Brian, I'm going to go Brian for sure.
He even knows it. He's like, cheers.
Are you talking about Weller Special Reserve or something?
That's pretty good memory. I mean, that was back on roundtable number 4.
Oh, wow. That's how much he hates crotch shot.
Wow.
That was early in the crotch shot movement.
Yeah. No, that was like mid-season.
That would have been 2016. Yeah, you're right. That's mid-season crotch shot time. But people are just perfecting their angles. You know,
it's been a while.
The worst part of the crotch shot now is they're no longer on social media. It's your friends fucking sending them to you in a text. And you're like, for God's sake, I don't want to see that.
Yeah. In one other scenario, is it okay just because you have a bottle there for you to see?
Yeah.
And I shit you not, I had a friend who took a picture of a bottle on the table while he was naked. And you see the reflection. Yes, it happened.
That's a special friend.
I had to tell him.
You might need to change up those friend lists there, Fred.
Block.
Well, Carrie, it was you, so...
Oh boy.
You didn't complain at the time.
All right. We got a few more and then we'll wrap it up here. That barrel with an awesome sticker is probably a barrel that somebody else passed on.
I feel like all of us may have said that.
I've said that a million times.
That was me. No, I feel like that was me.
I'm thinking Ryan.
But you asked for one from me, so that was actually me.
But he heard me say it more times than I was thinking.
I thought that could be you, Kenny.
All right, here's another one. The last greatest rapper was Tupac.
Oh, is that me?
Blake, for sure. He loves hip hop.
I don't stand by that statement. I have a few others I'd like to put in my top five, but
I'm pretty sure I said that.
It was Fred.
Oh, man. Fred is so hip.
Today I was hanging out with Yellow Wolf, so.
Yeah, I was pretty jealous of that, actually.
He was so cool. He was cool. It was really cool.
All right. One more to kind of close this out. Most people come to our house and we give them really, really rare good stuff. And what does that do? That makes them want the really, really rare good stuff. It's our own damn fault.
Ryan.
I don't know.
I'm gonna say Kerry.
He's raised his hands because that's exactly what it was. Him back on number five.
Yeah, I remember that. Sorry, friends. I did ruin you.
You're like, here's the best five bottles to get. Michter's 20, you know, as a newbie. Michter's 20, Pappy 15. Easy.
Dude, Henry McKenna, so good. Fred voted it best freaking bourbon and ruined it for everybody.
But Kerry, I mean, I always see these pictures you're posting. You got your friends over. You got, like, a really good bottle. It's, like, drank down to there's a quarter left. I mean, you've posted pictures of stuff before. It's all open. I mean, that's you, man. You're drinking the good stuff, right?
So my thing is always, I don't want my friends drinking all of my best bourbon at my funeral. So that's, like, always my motto is I don't want to go out with all the good bourbon sitting in the shelves. So drink the good stuff while you can.
Jody's like selling that shit the minute you're gone.
I know she is.
That's like my dad. My dad says about his inheritance. If there was anything left, it was a mistake. You know, for me, it's like, fair enough.
Well, fellas, that's going to wrap out this 50th recording of the Community Roundtable. For anybody that's sitting here watching it live, stick around. We'll probably sit here and keep talking for a little bit. But I want to say, fellas, thank you so much for coming in. This is a fun episode to kind of look back on 4.5 years with you all. We've done a ton of stuff together. We've all grown a lot. We've grown through this hobby a lot. If I could pull up some old pictures, I think 4 years we've changed. I think there was somebody actually asked a question. I didn't put it in here, but it was, they asked who's going to be the spokesperson for Rogaine at the end of the next round table.
This guy right here, my forehead right is there. Gaining.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, it moves. I've always had a big forehead, so it's not receding. It's just, we'll just that out there. Yeah.
But it's been a pleasure, especially, like I said, to have everybody on here tonight. This was great to get everybody's input, play a fun game, and really just to kind of look back at this time, because it's special of what this has really become, not only just for people that have all 250 people that were actually watching live tonight, but just for us personally to actually create these friendships. I think we can probably speak for each other and say it's been very fortunate and very incredible over the years.
Yeah, that's been the best part.
And we'll have an in-person one. We had one at Bourbon and Beyond last year. We'll have it again sometime. And, you know, I know we tried to do this in person. It didn't work out. But, you know, Kenny, I know how hard you work to try and make it so. But, guys, it's just so great seeing you all. It's always great hanging out. But I do look forward to the moment where we can toast a glass and, you know, rag on each other in person.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Yep. And maybe drink all the bourbon in my house.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I think we should go to Kerry's. Let's go to Atlanta.
Let's go.
They got good barbecue there.
They got the Falcons.
That hurt.
Have they won a game yet?
Yeah, we won one.
Cool.
It hurts.
All right, let's go ahead and start closing this out. So, Kerry, I'll let you go first.
Go first with what?
Close out. You haven't been on here for a while.
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming, and it was a great time.
I love it. It's short and sweet. It's the best. All right, Nick Jordan, go for it.
Sure. This is Jordan from Breaking Bourbon. You can find us at Breaking Bourbon on everything, including our website. You know, really just want to say, though, it's been really something special to grow this over the last 4.5 years. Just the close friendships and, more importantly, you know, doing this roundtable, and really a privilege for all of us to just be able to shoot the shit and talk about bourbon and have all the listeners out there really tune in and interact with us. So cheers to everyone at home listening.
I think Jordan said it. You know, I just echo that same thing. You know, I'm sure everybody echoes that, all the chatter, you know, everybody watching and tuning in. It's just great time. Yeah, if anything, encourage everybody. Holidays are coming up. You know, get somebody new interested in bourbon, you know, just one person. Start there. You know, it's a thing that connects people, and it's fantastic. I'm glad to be part of this group and glad to see everybody on, you know, watching and listening today. So thanks, guys.
Brian?
Thanks for having me on this. It's been fantastic. Echo both what everybody said already. And it's just been fantastic to do this. I enjoy it. Let's keep on doing it. The quote that I wish you would have called for me, though, Kerry, was, it's probably the only thing I remember saying on this. And it was within the last year, and I told Ryan, as your counsel, I advise you to shut the when he was saying something he shouldn't have, but it's all good. It's great. So everybody, thanks for being here. Thanks for enjoying this with us over the last 4.5 years. Find me at bourbonjustice.com and sippingcorn.com.
Right on.
I tend to do that. So thanks for looking out for me, Brian.
Absolutely. I got your back.
Blake.
Yeah. Once again, guys, Blake from Bourboner and Sealbox. It is crazy to get reflective and look back at, you know, kind of how far this has become of just this random Twitter group message we had to, you know, 50 episodes later. So thanks again to Kenny, Fred, Ryan, you know, Lauren. I feel like Lauren does not get enough credit on the actual show, but, you know, really making this thing work. So as always, thanks for having me. Great time.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yep. And, you know, Ryan and Fred, I kind of want to lean in on you and let you two kind of close it out with anything you want to kind of add as well.
You know, I mean, to me, this is the culture of bourbon. This round table is, it's always such a pleasure to be hanging out with my friends and talking about what's going on. And what I love about it is that we talk about things that matter to, bourbon folks, you know? So, and I think that's why, like, anytime you go to Bourbon Pursuit, you find us on Instagram, you listen to us, you can see that the vision and the goal is always to try and keep the conversation moving about bourbon.
Cheers. I mean, what an incredible journey. I mean, good God, when I was sitting, Kenny and I sat in my basement and did this, I never thought we would be here, you know, doing 50 episodes of roundtables. I mean, this roundtable epitomizes what bourbon is to me and to everyone. It's hanging out with your close friends, you know, just having a great time, enjoying different drinks, different topics, different comments, just catching up. It's not about the whiskey, it's about the people. And that's what's so special about this hobby, is that it brings you so close to people, and it's just something you can all gather around, no matter what's going on in your life, in the world. It's just something for an hour. We just sit and focus, and it's so refreshing. Whereas all day long, you just get bombarded by junk. And, you know, it's just so refreshing to be able to spend time with people and, you know, that you care about and that you can just hang out. And I'm just thankful for it all. That's all I can say. So,
hey, Kenny, I'm going
to
give
a shout out to Lauren, too. That was whoever said that Lauren doesn't get enough credit. She does not. She has to put up with me. She has to put up with Kenny. When we do all this stuff, I mean, she picks through this stuff. It's incredible how much effort and just the work she puts in. And it's, I'm so grateful for both the Colemans and everyone here. It's awesome stuff.
You're the people's champ for a reason, bro.
Yeah. That's tough. I needed to collect some thoughts. That's tough to go after, 'cause you are the people's champ. And, I think when Kenny and I first maybe, and that even floated the idea, maybe of this round table, I don't know, like 4, 6, or 7 years ago, you guys, what's been cool to me is to see how all of you have flourished in the bourbon hobby. Like, this is your hobby. This is what you do for fun. And it's been cool to see all of you guys flourish, even as I have taken a back seat and enjoyed retired. And honestly, I enjoy my retirement. You guys are busting your ass every day for the bourbon community. You do it for the love of the hobby. And on behalf of all the people who are not in the bourbon blogging shoes and the level that you guys are, thank you for all the work that you guys do for our community.
Well, cheers. Thank you, everybody. Like I said, this is, I don't like getting sentimental on these shows, but it is fun to kind of put it out there. So everybody knows that this isn't just a bunch of banter. Like, we really do care for each other. There's a lot of hard work that goes behind it, not just for Bourbon Pursuit, but for everybody that's here. Everybody puts a lot of heart and soul into this hobby, and it's good to see, you know, it all out there for everybody. But let's go ahead and we'll kind of call it for this episode, BCR 50 in the books. We'll go back and we'll look back at what dumb quotes we say when we hit BCR 100. So
it'll be on 51.
Actually, when you stop recording, all the quotes will be
pretty much. Yeah. Cheers, everybody, and we'll see you all next week.
Cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Cheers.